Chapter 54. "It's her wish, and I am willing," said Phillotson with grave reserve, opposition making him illogically tenacious now. "Great piece of laxity will be rectified. I don't believe it. She's his wife if anybody's. She's had three children by him, and he loves her dearly, and it's a wicked shame to egg her onto this, poor little quivering thing. She's got nobody on her side. The one man who'd be her friend, the obstinate creature won't allow to come near her. What first put her into this mood, oh mind, I wonder? I can't tell. Not I, certainly. It is all voluntary on her part. Now that's all I have to say." Phillotson spoke stiffly. "You've turned round, Mrs. Edlin. It is unseemly of you. Well, I knowed you'd be affronted at what I had to say, but I don't mind that. The truth's the truth. I'm not affronted, Mrs. Edlin. You've been too kind a neighbor for that. But I must be allowed to know what's best for myself and Susanna. I suppose you won't go to church with us, then?" "No. Be hanged if I can. I don't know what the time's be coming to. Matrimony have grown to be that serious in these days, that one really do feel afeard to move in it at all. In my time we took it more careless, and I don't know that we was any the worse for it. When I and my poor man were jined in it, we kept up the junketing all the week, and drunk the parish dry, and had to borrow half a crown to begin housekeeping." When Mrs. Edlin had gone back to her cottage, Phillotson spoke moodily. "I don't know whether I ought to do it at any rate quite so rapidly. Why? If she is really compelling herself to this against her instincts merely from this new sense of duty or religion, I ought perhaps to let her wait a bit. Now you've got so far, you ought not to back out of it. That's my opinion. I can't very well put it off now, that's true. But I had a qualm when she gave that little cry at sight of the license. Now, never you have qualms, old boy. I mean to give her away tomorrow morning, and you mean to take her. It has always been on my conscience that I didn't urge more objections to your letting her go, and now we've got to this stage, I shan't be content if I don't help you to set the matter right." Phillotson nodded, and seeing how staunch his friend was, became more frank. "No doubt when it gets known what I've done, I shall be thought a soft fool by many. But they don't know Sue as I do. Though so elusive, hers is such an honest nature at bottom that I don't think as he has ever done anything against her conscience. The fact of her having lived with folly goes for nothing. At the time she left me for him, she thought she was quite within her right. Now she thinks otherwise. The next morning came, and the self-sacrifice of the woman on the altar of what she was pleased to call her principles was acquiesced in by these two friends, each from his own point of view. Phillotson went across to the Widow Edlin's to fetch Sue a few minutes after 8 o'clock. The fog of the previous day or two on the lowlands had traveled up here by now, and the trees on the green caught armfuls and turned them into showers of big drops. The bride was waiting, ready, bonnet and all on. As he had never in her life looked so much like the lily her name connoted as she did in that pallid morning light. Chastened, world-weary, remorseful, the strain on her nerves had preyed upon her flesh and bones, and she appeared smaller in outline than as he had formerly done, though Sue had not been a large woman in her days of rudest health. "Prompt," said the schoolmaster, magnanimously taking her hand. But he checked his impulse to kiss her, remembering her start of yesterday, which unpleasantly lingered in his mind. Gillingham joined them, and they left the house, Widow Edlin continuing steadfast in her refusal to assist in the ceremony. "Where is the church?" said Sue. As he had not lived there for any length of time since the old church was pulled down, and in her preoccupation forgot the new one. "Up here," said Phillotson, and presently the tower loomed large and solemn in the fog. The vicar had already crossed to the building, and when they entered he said pleasantly, "We almost want candles. You do wish me to be yours, Richard?" gasped Sue in a whisper. "Certainly, dear. Above all things in the world." Sue said no more, and for the second or third time he felt he was not quite following out the humane instinct which had induced him to let her go. There they stood, five altogether. The parson, the clerk, the couple, and Gillingham, and the holy ordinance was re-solemnized forthwith. In the nave of the edifice were two or three villagers, and when the clergyman came to the words, "What God hath joined," a woman's voice from among these was heard to utter audibly, "God hath joined indeed." It was like a reenactment by the ghosts of their former selves of the similar scene which had taken place at Melchester years before. When the books were signed, the vicar congratulated the husband and wife on having performed a noble, and righteous, and mutually forgiving act. "LL's well that ends well," he said smiling. "May you long be happy together, after thus having been saved as by fire." Apostrophe, they came down the nearly empty building, and crossed to the schoolhouse. Gillingham wanted to get home that night, and left early. He, too, congratulated the couple. "Ah," he said in parting from Phillotson, who walked out a little way, "I shall be able to tell the people in your native place a good round tale, and they'll all say well done, apostrophe depend on it." When the schoolmaster got back, Sue was making a pretense of doing some housewifery, as if she lived there. But she seemed timid at his approach, and compunction wrought on him at sight of it. "Of course, my dear, I shan't expect to intrude upon your personal privacy any more than I did before," he said gravely. "T is for our good socially to do this, and that's its justification, if it was not my reason." Sue brightened a little. Why, the place was the door of Jude's lodging in the outskirts of Christminster, far from the precincts of St. Silas's, where he had formerly lived, which saddened him to sickness. The rain was coming down. A woman in shabby black stood on the doorstep talking to Jude, who held the door in his hand. "I am lonely, destitute, and houseless, that's what I am. Father has turned me out of doors, after borrowing every penny I got, to put it into his business, and then accusing me of laziness, when I was only waiting for a situation. I am at the mercy of the world. If you can't take me and help me, Jude, I must go to the workhouse, or to something worse. Only just now two undergraduates winked at me as I came along. 'Tis hard for a woman to keep virtuous where there's so many young men." The woman in the rain who spoke thus was Arabella, the evening being that of the day after Sue's remarriage with Phillotson. "I am sorry for you, but I am only in lodgings," said Jude coldly. "Then you turn me away? I'll give you enough to get food and lodging for a few days." "Oh, but can't you have the kindness to take me in? I cannot endure going to a public house to lodge, and I am so lonely. Please, Jude, for old time's sake." "No, no," said Jude hastily. "Don't want to be reminded of those things, and if you talk about them, I shall not help you." "Then I suppose I must go," said Arabella. She bent her head against the doorpost and began sobbing. "The house is full," said Jude. "And I have only a little extra room to my own, not much more than a closet, where I keep my tools, and templates, and the few books I have left. That would be a palace for me. There is no bedstead in it. A bit of a bed could be made on the floor. It would be good enough for me." Unable to be harsh with her, and not knowing what to do, Jude called the man who let the lodgings, and said this was an acquaintance of his in great distress for want of temporary shelter. "You may remember me as barmaid at the Lamb and Flack formerly?" spoke up Arabella. "Why, father has insulted me this afternoon, and I've left him, though without a penny." The householder said he could not recall her features. "But still, if you are a friend of Mr. Fawley's, we'll do what we can for a day or two, if he'll make himself answerable." "Yes, yes," said Jude. "He has really taken me quite unawares, but I should wish to help her out of her difficulty." And an arrangement was ultimately come to under which a bed was to be thrown down in Jude's lumber room, to make it comfortable for Arabella till she could get out of the strait she was in, not by her own fault, as she declared, and returned to her father's again. While they were waiting for this to be done, Arabella said, "You know the news, I suppose? I guess what you mean, but I know nothing. I had a letter from Annie at Alfredston today. As he had just heard that the wedding was to be yesterday. But she didn't know if it had come off. I don't wish to talk of it. No, no. Of course you don't. Only it shows what kind of woman, don't speak of her, I say. She's a fool. And she's an angel too, poor dear. If it's done, he'll have a chance of getting back to his old position, by everybody's account, so Annie says. All his well-wishers will be pleased, including the bishop himself. Do spare me, Arabella." Arabella was duly installed in the little attic, and at first she did not come near Jude at all. She went to and fro about her own business, which, when they met for a moment on the stairs or in the passage, she informed him was that of obtaining another place in the occupation she understood best. When Jude suggested London as affording the most likely opening in the liquor trade, she shook her head. "Oh, the temptations are too many," she said. "Any humble tavern in the country before that for me." On the Sunday morning following, when he breakfasted later than on other days, she meekly asked him if she might come in to breakfast with him, as he had broken her teapot and could not replace it immediately, the shops being shut. "Yes, if you like," he said indifferently. While they sat without speaking, she suddenly observed, "You seem all in a brood, old man. I'm sorry for you." "I am all in a brood. It is about her, I know. It's no business of mine, but I could find out all about the wedding, if it really did take place, if you wanted to know." "How could you?" "I wanted to go to Alfredston, to get a few things I left there. And I could see Annie, who'll be sure to have heard all about it, as he has friends at Marygreen." Jude could not bear to acquiesce in this proposal, but his suspense pitted itself against his discretion, and won in the struggle. "You can ask about it if you like," he said. "I've not heard a sound from there. It must have been very private, if they have married. I am afraid I haven't enough cash to take me there and back, or I should have gone before. I must wait till I have earned some." "Oh, I can pay the journey for you," he said impatiently. And thus his suspense, as to Sue's welfare, and the possible marriage, moved him to dispatch for intelligence the last emissary he would have thought of choosing deliberately. Arabella went, Jude requesting her to be home not later than by the 7 o'clock train. When he had gone, he said, "Why should I have charged her to be back by a particular time? She's nothing to me nor the other neither." But having finished work, he could not help going to the station to meet Arabella, dragged thither by feverish haste, to get the news she might bring, and know the worst. Arabella had made dimples most successfully all the way home, and when she stepped out of the railway carriage she smiled. He merely said, "Well?" with the very reverse of a smile. "They are married." "Yes, of course they are," he returned. She observed, however, the hard strain upon his lip as he spoke. "Annie says he has heard from Belinda, her relation out at Marygreen, that it was very sad and curious." "How do you mean sad?" "She wanted to marry him again, didn't she? And he her?" "Yes, that was it. She wanted to in one sense, but not in the other. Mrs. Edlin was much upset by it all, and spoke out her mind at Phillotson. But Sue was that excited about it, that she burnt her best embroidery, that she'd worn with you, to blot you out entirely. Well, if a woman feels like it, she ought to do it. I commend her for it, though others don't." Arabella sighed. He felt he was her only husband, and that she belonged to nobody else in the sight of God Almighty while he lived. Perhaps another woman feels the same about herself too. Arabella sighed again. "I don't want any cant," exclaimed Jude. "It isn't cant," said Arabella. "Feel exactly the same as she." He closed that issue by remarking abruptly, L, now I know all I wanted to know. Many thanks for your information. I am not going back to my lodgings just yet. And he left. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.